Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the haunted Cheney Mansion in Jerseyville, Illinois. The Cheney Mansion in Jerseyville, Illinois, didn't start out as a stately mansion. Its history traces back to 1827, when it was known as the Red House. It was the area's first frame house with two rooms upstairs and two rooms downstairs. Over the years, it was not only a home, but a stagecoach stop, a tavern, a doctor's office, a bank, and it even had a cistern that hid slaves searching for freedom on the Underground Railroad. Over the years, the small Red House went from four rooms to a sprawling mansion of more than 12,000 square feet. Thanks to a dedicated group of volunteers, the home is in remarkable condition. This might explain why some former residents still remain in the home. Several spirits still reside in the Cheney Mansion, including a former owner, P.D. Cheney himself. But he's not alone. Today on The Grave Talks, we'll talk about the history and the hauntings of the Cheney Mansion with Roger Scheffel.
Jersey County Historical Society owns the Cheney Mansion. We have since 1998. And I sit on the board of directors for the society. I'm actually secretary of the board. And then we break off into committees for different duties around. And I happen to be chairman of the mansion committee. So I kind of run the day-to-day operations as far as the Cheney Mansion goes.
When I first talked to you a week or so ago, my first question to you was, how do you pronounce it, Cheney or Cheney? And you said Cheney. And I said, oh, because I live right by a little town outside of Wichita. It's called Cheney, Kansas. And there is a connection between the two, which I did not see that coming. That was a little twist for me.
Yes. A while back, we got a letter to our genealogy lab in our museum, and they were wanting more information on the first P.D. Cheney, who they nicknamed Judge. He was one of the original forefathers, if you would, here in our town and helped get our community started. But P.D. Actually had affiliation with the railroad as it went west. And I think your town probably, according to the letter we got, used to be called Cheney Station, and then they just changed it to Cheney. But it was actually named after him.
So this house, well, I should say the mansion started off as a house. Yes. And it's been a number of things over the years. A
gentleman by the name of James Faulkner built the first four rooms of the house, the center section, I like to call it. It was two-story. There was two rooms down, two up. And he used it as his home. Lived in it a few years, not real long. And then a gentleman by the name of Alfred Carpenter purchased it from him. And Alfred turned it into what he called the Little Red House. And it was that way until it was sold in 1837, I believe. But the Little Red House was a tavern and a place you could rent a bed upstairs in the two rooms upstairs. In those days, you rented a bed. There was probably several beds in each room. You didn't rent a room, but you rented a bed. And it was actually a stagecoach stop is what it was. Highway 67, Illinois 67, that runs directly in front of the mansion here, was the main stagecoach line from St. Louis to Jacksonville, Illinois. People could stop here, spend the night, get something to eat or drink. They did have some barns out back. Way back, we see pictures. I don't know this for a fact, but I can speculate that possibly even kept fresh horses here, and they might even change the team out on the stage at times. I don't know that, but that's a speculation. Also, in those days, we were a stop on the Underground Railroad. The property had a false cistern. And slaves were actually hidden here on their journey north.
So was
stop on the railroad.
Was that cistern there when it was the original structure, or was that added on at some point?
The cistern was dug, and it was actually located, basically it was under the house. We speculate a trapdoor was in the corner of what is now the dining room. Don't know if it was a dining room then or what they used it for, but the door had to come up, and they entered and exited through the top of the cistern. after a renovation was put on in the 1870s, the basement was dug under the south wing of the house. And now there's actually an opening in that basement wall where you can get into the side of the cistern downstairs. But in those days, when it was active in the 1860s, that wasn't there. So they had to enter and exit through the top.
And from anybody who is looking for them or trying to keep them safe, probably from the outside or if they looked in, it had a false bottom, so they were able to hide people?
Yes. I mean, I speculate a trap door of some sort that was hidden under a rug or maybe a piece of furniture in the corner of that room. And, you know, that could be lifted up and they could go in and out down there. It's not a real big place. And I have no idea how many they would get in there at one time or whatever, or how long they had to stay here. But it is definitely a stop. In the late 1950s, the Cheneys were doing some foundation work to the west basement wall of the mansion. And the workers out in the front yard dug into a tunnel that led across the street, kind of towards a big brick house on a corner that was built in the 1920s. Now, back in the slave times, that's where our livery stable was here in Jerseyville. So we kind of speculate that possibly that tunnel did lead across there, and maybe they came into the livery stable in false bottom wagons, something to that sort, and they might have snuck them across. It was in very bad repair. They didn't try to explore it or anything. The Cheneys actually just had them fill it in. They didn't want any liability for it. So, but wow. I do have a newspaper article that that does say that they dug into that tunnel.
So this one building has been so many different things and added onto. So it does not today look like that original structure at all.
Oh no, no, no. The center structure is still here. And if you get in the attic of the house, you can actually go into one part of the attic and look, and you can still see the old roof line of the Red House up there and still see the old wooden shake shingles.
Wow.
And that the whole house is just kind of built around it. There's what we call the business office on the north end of the house, and it has an onion dome. It's very, I'm going to say a big word here, ornate, I guess you'd say. It's a very beautiful addition. And that was, there's a vault in there that you walk in. I'd say it's roughly 6 foot by 10 foot concrete walls, ceiling, the whole works. And it has a big, huge door, Hall Safe Company, I believe, or something of that sort from St. Louis. P.D. Cheney, the judge, and his father-in-law, D'Arcy, did have one of the first banks in the area, and they were in the banking business. And so that vault was part of their business.
So
and that room was also used as a doctor's office as well. Maybe not per se too much of an active practice, but Mr. D'Arcy was a doctor, and A.M. Cheney later on was a doctor. And there is separate entrances and exits from that part of the house, so you don't have to come through the main dwelling to get into. So I'm sure back in those days, there was probably some knocks on the door. I mean, you know, the town doctor, it's a little different than it is today. You don't see them right without an appointment, but back then it was a little different.
So there was a separate entrance, but they still lived on the grounds there.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. It was attached to the house. It's just got a little bit of a hallway with some built-in cabinets that you actually enter into that part of the house.
You know, it's interesting. I don't think, at least for me, the doctor's office being attached to their dwelling, that doesn't seem surprising to me. That seems to make sense because, especially then, a doctor would kind of be on call 24/7. I could see people yeah. just walking up to his door and knocking on the window. Now, the bank, that seems like it would have been two different structures for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have a lot of research on the bank as how much actual banking business took place here, rather than maybe this was just a place for them to store some of the assets of the bankers or whatever. But you can go in there and there is a little, I guess in today's world, it would be like safety deposit boxes. But in there's different size little cubby holes that are all numbered. And
I saw pictures of those, and I was wondering what that was.
Yes. And all, you know, anybody that had something they wanted to keep at the bank, you know, that nobody had a safe or a vault at home, or not a lot of people. If they didn't want to bury it in the backyard, they brought it in here, and I guess they kept it in there for them. The bank that they had here in the area, the R.C. and Cheney, they had deep enough pockets that they were the only bank in this general area that was able to stay afloat throughout the Civil War.
Seeing there's a whole nother historical aspect to this home. He ended up giving or selling the home to his daughter and her husband, and that's where P.D. Cheney comes in.
Well, in 1837, Mr. D'Arcy purchased the house from Alfred Carpenter, and it was no longer the Red House. He made it into his home. And he got started in the business here in the area in Jerseyville. He had came from the East Coast. He settled from New Jersey. And he took on a business partner, and his name was P.D. Cheney. P.D. standing for Prentice Dana Cheney. And they started into their business ventures. He started out just working for him, and then they actually became partners. And Mr. D'Arcy and his wife had a daughter, Catherine, and Catherine and P.D. kind of hit it off and started courting and soon were married. So they became not only business partners, but father-in-law and son-in-law. And then when he passed away in 1863, I believe it was, Catherine and P.D. fell heir to the mansion. And they were the first generation of Cheneys to live here. And then there were two more. It's went through three generations of the Cheney family.
Now, did the name Prentice Dana go on? Was that a passed down name or was there just one of them?
Well, actually, it's kind of odd. P.D. and Catherine started having children, wanted to have a family. And their firstborn, they named him Edward D'Arcy Cheney. And he passed away as an infant. And then they had a second child, a male, a boy. And actually, they named him the same, Edward D'Arcy Cheney. And unfortunately, he only made it to about 10 months and passed away. Yes, it was kind of a bad deal. And then they had a daughter, and I believe she was about 3-4 years old. She passed away actually on a vacation to Florida. They were in Florida, and she came down with back then, I think they could call it the croup, but it was a respiratory disorder, and she passed away on a trip. But then they had Alexander Murray Cheney, A.M., they called him, and he was their youngest and only child to make it to adulthood.
Oh, and that's so
him,
sad.
Him and his wife had children. They named their firstborn Edward D'Arcy Cheney, and you know it, he passed away as a young child. So then they named their next one after Grandpa P.D. Cheney. So, yes, there was a second P.D. Cheney. He was born here at the mansion in March of 1912.
That's amazing to me that three children were all named Edward D'Arcy and none of them lived. I mean, I get they're trying to, nod to the dad. I understand all that. Sure. But after losing the first one, I don't think I could name a second one the same name. That would be too hard.
We've had a lot of people say that, and I can't argue with you. That would be kind of tough.
It was a different time, too.
Oh, yes.
And you could have 7 or 8 or 10 kids, and if you had half of them live into adulthood, that was pretty good.
All you have to do is go through a cemetery, with graves dating back in those days, and you'll see that people didn't live to be old back then.
Mm-mm.
Right.
That was hard on the mom and the child. So Catherine and P.D. lived there for quite a while. Then they passed.
I'd have to pull some records out. Now you're asking some dates there that I can't quote.
I don't need exact 100%. Dates.
But I do know that the D'Arcy died in 1863, and that's when they fell heir to the mansion. Now, and it was those original four rooms and that business office that I talked about that they built on. And in 1872, they built the south wing on with the grand master bedroom upstairs and such as that. And then there was also some servants' quarters with a back stairway that leads down to the kitchen. That made it into the 14-room mansion that it is today.
And I was going to ask you to kind of describe what it looks like. And anyway, you can go Google it, Cheney Mansion, Jerseyville, and it'll pop up. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous building.
Yeah, I can't tell you who the designer or builder was. We've probably got those
multiple
records somewhere,
maybe.
But I don't know that. But it has some grandeur to it, that's for sure. It has the what we call the prayer tower. I don't know the actual name for that, but it is it stretches two floors above the second floor. The tower does. There's actually a small narrow stairway that you can go to the next level of the tower that you see from the front of the house. And there's two old wicker chairs there. And that's a part of the house that we haven't remodeled. When you walk in there, you're still getting an 1872 wallpaper on the wall. The old plaster's not in as good a shape as it used to be. things like that. But it is it's original up there, and the only gas light left in the house is still hanging on the wall of the first floor of the tower as well.
Now, when you look at the pictures, it's just in such remarkable condition. A lot of times I talk about old homes and mansions and hospitals and sanatoriums and different things, and they're all in disrepair. This is not. So was there ever a point where it was and then somebody kind of brought it back to life, or has it always been well-maintained over the years?
No, that point would have been when we got it. In 1998, when we got it by way of an auction, P.D. Cheney, the last P.D., he passed away in 1969, and his third wife, Edith, fell heir to the mansion. She lived here. She became ill, actually got Alzheimer's pretty bad. Her sister came here from California and actually moved in and lived with Edith, took care of her. Over a period of time, she was a flower shop owner. She had Cheney's Flowers here, but the business shut down in the 70s. And they just kind of spent up the money and didn't work on the house. And by the time we got the house in 1998, it wasn't falling down by any means, but it was in dire need of some love. And we gave it to it. We were fortunate enough to have the house donated to us. A gentleman by the name of Clayton Brown. He was born and raised here in the county, went to the service, and I think he was in the Korean War. And when he came back, he couldn't find work in this area, and he moved to Chicago and did one thing and another and wound up starting his own business up there as an interior decorator and made himself a fortune. He was multimillionaire, self-made up there. And he came back and wanted to do something for the community. He was classmates with a couple of the people on our board at the time there in the late 90s. And they said, well, if you really want to do something, there's an auction coming up and we would love to have this place as our hub for the Jersey County Historical Society. And by golly, he bought the house for us and donated it to us and then gave us the money to do all the remodel. And
wow.
And wound up being close to $250,000.
That's incredible.
Yeah, we are so fortunate. People's generosity to us has just been amazing and unbelievable. We're kind of the envy of the historical societies around our area because a lot of them aren't, they just don't have the, they just haven't been as fortunate and I guess as lucky as we have. But I also have to take a little credit and for our board. We all get along well, we work hard, and we do take care of business. So we take care of the place.
And when you first got it in 1998, and you said it needed quite a bit of work, did you know right away that you would use it as the hub for the Historical Society, turn it into a museum? Did you have any plans at that time for it?
Oh yes, we knew it would be, you know, our mainstay. I address it as our flagship. And not too long after that, we built the what we call the museum. And it's the big white steel building that sits right in the center of our property. And it also houses a lot of our collections. And we had a gentleman here in town actually build a wing onto it later on and donate part of his collection to us so it could be displayed in that wing.
Wow.
So it's got a lot of artifacts, antique cars, things like that in it. The mansion, we try to have it, period. It's all, you know, mid-1800s to late 1800s furniture and things like that. There's a few electric lamps that are early, you know, early on. It's just, you know, we try to make everything look authentic. And I will tell you that the Historical Society displays nothing, absolutely nothing that does not have a tie to Jersey County. If somebody from Chicago came in with a beautiful piece of furniture and wanted to donate it to us, we would be very thankful, but we would decline. We will not display anything that does not have a tie to our county.
And on the grounds, there are other buildings too, correct?
Correct, yes.
Kind of outbuildings or something?
Yes. We have what we call the block building, which it is original to the mansion. P.D. Cheney built the block building in the late 50s. So Edith, his third wife, could start her flower shop. She had Cheney's Flowers here for, 20, 25 years, I guess, something like that. The downstairs and the upstairs is all knotty pine. PD had it all done up with a huge, beautiful stone fireplace and hardwood floors. And that's where he had his gun collection. He had quite an extensive gun collection, and he displayed it up there. And they actually had a night watchman that lived on the property, and a groundskeeper, I guess, of sort. And he lived up there in the second floor of what we call the block building. And then we have our Union Forest Church. It's a 100-year-old church that sits in the corner of our property down here. And it's all been redone. It's an authentic country church that was given to us, and we moved it here in 2010. And it was, it's set about 8 miles southwest of here of Jerseyville, here near a town called Otterville. And when they stopped having church, the family that owned the ground, it went back to them, and they asked if we'd like to have it. So they donated it to us. And we had to do quite a bit of work to it, but it's a beautiful little church, and it's got the old original pews in it. And we don't have services in it or anything, but we do rent it out to people who we've had several weddings in it. And we probably have, I don't know, 5-6 weddings a year in it. It's heated, air conditioned. It's in very good shape.
Well, and just also, getting married on the grounds would be so awesome.
Yep. We also have a one-room school here in Jerseyville, I believe, back in the mid-1800s through, I think, 1952, the last one closed. We used to have one-room schools all over the county. I think at one time there was close to 70 of them. And we do have one of those one-room schools that was donated to us, and we moved it here to the property. And it's completely redone. It looks just like it did back in the time with the old chalkboards on the wall. We even have a piece of black canvas that is what was used as you can write on it before there were actually chalkboards. And it's authentic. It dates back to those times. But the teacher's desk up front with two different bells on it and the whole works. It's a nice little piece. And also on our grounds, we have three log cabins. And the reason we have those is before Jerseyville got its name, Jerseyville, the first settlement here was just a little settlement consisting of three log cabins near D'Arcy Branch, which is about a mile north of the city limits. And it was those three log cabins up there. So we put three log cabins on our property to kind of reenact that Hickory Grove settlement. They're not the log cabins that were in Hickory Grove, but they are authentic log cabins that were donated to us, and we moved them here. One of the cabins, it's not a very big cabin. We call it the McAdams cabin. It's two stories, but trust me, it's just one room down, one room up, and the McAdams family raised 7 children in it.
At what point, you know, since the Historical Society has had this for so long, my guess is that they didn't buy it thinking, I bet there's ghosts in that. Guess was that was an afterthought, or it was a discovery after the purchase. When did you start realizing there was something else going on in the mansion?
I'd have to say that was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 2008, 2009, something like that. I started getting into the paranormal part of it pretty heavy in 2011, 2012, and have been helping out with the running of it. And then now I think I guess it's coming up on 10 or 11 years now. I've been helping out with it. And this will be my 6th year coming up, I guess, taking over just running the day-to-day operations of the mansion and taking care of the bookings of the paranormal investigations and that.
Do you think that maybe somebody sensed activity, or I just imagine it was there all along, but you know, it's that sort of thing. You don't want to acknowledge it. We're going to ignore it. I don't want to talk about the mansion being haunted. Do you think there could have been a little denial going on?
Oh, there was, and there was a little bit of non-belief, you know, obviously a lot more back then. But yeah, I think, the lady that kind of took care of the house back in those days, I think she had a few experiences and said a few things to her friends, and one thing led to another. And then they started coming up here at night, kind of sitting in the dark, see if they could hear anything or feel anything. And then as the ghost hunting shows and the paranormal investigating shows on TV got more popular, they started buying a recorder here and there, or maybe an infrared camera. And now I've got, way too much ghost hunting equipment, I guess, here in the cabinet. But yeah, it's it's gotten into a pretty good sized thing. And I tell you, the paranormal field, just, I can't say good enough about paranormal people. We have groups come here from all over the country. I've had people from Las Vegas, people from down south, Georgia, Alabama, came here. I did have a group from Canada come one time. And all of them are just super, super people. I've never had, knock on wood, I've never had one problem with any group that's been through here. And gosh, there's been a lot of groups through here in the last 10 years or better that I've been affiliated with doing it.
When you think about it, the paranormal groups are very respectful to the property. Yep. And they're not there to make a lot of noise and drink a whole bunch and kind of tear the place up. That's not the reason for being there. It's not a party. It's an investigation.
Correct.
And so
Correct.
To me, you know, they would be very good people to rent the place out to.
And I always enjoy, we used to have public nights. We would sell tickets, single tickets. Instead of booking a group, we'd sell like 10 single tickets for a public night and sold a few of those out. And then, of course, had a few where there was only two or three people. But at times you would get people who come in here and they just, you know, they didn't take it serious. And I just kind of got away from that. I'd rather deal with the, I guess, what I would call, quote, professional groups. It's amazing. You'd be surprised how respectful they are of the property, like you say. And they're also respectful of the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they treat the spirits with much respect. There's hardly ever any heckling or anything that goes on here to try to stir them up. And most of the time, you really don't have to. Our house very seldom lets us down. Very seldom do I ever have a group come here. As a matter of fact, I don't know that I can remember one that can come here and actually say they didn't have at least something happen throughout the night.
That's pretty incredible. That's a very
really
active
is.
Location.
Yeah, it really is, because I've been to some of the big ones. I've been to Valeska, Iowa, the Axe Murder House. I've been to Waverly Hills, you know, the sanitarium in Louisville, Kentucky, several others. And I've had some nights where we just didn't get anything. But I won't say that I was disappointed going, because half of it to me going, or maybe even more than half, is just to see the place and get the history of it and to say, hey, I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just get a kick out of that.
You know, I always say you can't really fully understand the hauntings unless you understand the history. I think the two go so hand in hand. There might might not always explain everything by any means, but I think it can sometimes explain some of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point. Very good. I've done some we've went and investigated places and then put on like a little show or a dinner there's an old restaurant here in town that's very haunted. And, we have did two or three investigations in it, and then put on a dinner later on and sold it out. About 60 people would come to see our evidence and have a dinner and everything. And people are intrigued with it. They're very interested in it.
When you talk about the spirits, do you feel, and I have read about there are some regular spirits, it seems you have an idea of who they are?
Yeah, we've got two or three or four here, I'd say, that are pretty regular. Everybody seems to think that PD is still upstairs in his room, what we call PD room, and he roams around. And I'm talking about the last PD, the one that died in 69. He was quite a character. Tell you a little bit about him. He, like I said, he was born in 1912, died in 69 at the age of 57. He was highly educated and spoke seven languages. He graduated after high school. He actually went to a military academy and then went on to college, and he had a wonderful education. Got a job at Barnes Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri. I think he was worked something to do with the laboratory, and he worked about 6 weeks and came home and decided that was enough of that. He never worked another day in his life. He spent the family fortune. He traveled the world with three wives. He was somewhat of our town eccentric and kind of proud of it. He was a little bit of an alcoholic, had an addiction to what was called charcoal cough medicine back in those days. He was buddies with Ivan Heiderscheid that had the Kirby's Rexall drugstore here in town. And Mr. Heiderscheid won a national award one year for selling the most of that brand of cough medicine as any drugstore in the nation.
Well, we know who was buying it from him.
Probably 50% alcohol or better. Yeah, he would drink about anything. PD was a character. He was a real character. Well liked in town. Don't get me wrong. He was well liked. He was on the city council for one term, and he was a character. He died in 69. I'm 61. I was born in 62. And I remember seeing him one time at Kirby's drugstore. He hung out there a lot. And I remember going in there with my mom and mom telling me, now that was Mr. Cheney after we left. So I can actually say I did see him one time in person. But yeah, he was something. He really was. And there's a million PD stories. There really is. I could talk for hours.
And his wife, I read this, so I never know if it's completely true. But there was a room in the house that they refer to as the drunk room. And when that's he would correct. Be drunk, she would shut him in that room.
That's where not he would deal sleep with that him. Night. Yep. And the drunk room's kind of active upstairs as far as paranormal goes. If something's going to happen in the drunk room, you're going to smell a foul odor. And then you probably, if you go in there and smell a foul odor, you better get some recording equipment on, because something, you know, he's going to say something or growl at you or something before the night's over.
Really? So a very active location.
Yeah, it really is. We have various different types of hauntings, I guess, if you will, you know, it's like residual or intelligent haunt or something here. And it really varies as to what you can use as far as equipment. I mean, some of the spirit box type things, one night they'll talk your leg off through one of them. And the next night you might only get some activity through your EMF meters or something like that. And it switches around to different rooms in the house. One kind of a residual haunt, I guess you would call it, is in what we call the children's room upstairs. There's an attic door that will open and shut on its own at times. It might not do it for 6 months, and then it might take off and be very active. That door will work for you just almost on command for 2 or 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden it's gone again, you know.
That's interesting.
But it's always the same thing, open or shut on its own.
I was watching a video on your Facebook page, so I don't know what room it was, but there was a door that was shutting and opening.
Yeah, that would be the attic door in the children's room, what we call the children's room upstairs.
Yeah, there was one. There's nobody there. You just see it shut.
Yeah. Yeah. We have surveillance cameras in the house. I have 16 cameras throughout the house, where the main room where you come in, what we call the sunroom, that it's the only new room on the house that we built it on the back of the house. And that's kind of ground zero. It's our team room. That's where people come in and have their equipment put up. And we have furniture in here, tables and chairs. We have, you know, nice chairs and couches. And that's where the teams gather. And if they take their breaks throughout the night, but they can sit here and watch the entire house. A lot of teams wind up the last couple hours of their investigation just sitting there watching the cameras. They kind of make lazy ghost hunters out of you. But I've got them on right now just watching the house. But it's quite interesting to see how what kind of response we get from our hunters on it. And we actually, our hard drives, we're able to plug in SD cards. And for $25, we offer the groups, you know, we can back them up and download their entire investigation.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people take it in. They really like that.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Roger Scheffel about the Cheney Mansion. In part two, we'll talk about an amazing video they captured of an orb coming out of a mirror in the mansion. For more information about the Cheney Mansion and paranormal investigations, visit their website at cheneymansion.net or visit their Facebook page. Just search for Cheney Mansion. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it 3 days free, see if you like it, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. You'll also find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.